Blog Talk Radio. We are not alone. And welcome to another episode of Contact Radio, featuring Leslie Mitchell-Clark and co-host Wes Roberts, where we explore ufology and beyond with the help of the world's foremost experts. And without further ado, here's your host and your guide, Leslie Mitchell-Clark. And a very, very good evening to all of our listeners out there. This is your host, Leslie Mitchell-Clark, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host and partner in crime, Mr. Wes Roberts. Wes, good evening to you.
Hi, Leslie. Glad to be on the show tonight. We have a fascinating guest, and this is her first appearance, and we hope it's going to continue.
Absolutely. And, you know, we really wanted to have a very positive experience, a positive interview to kick off our first live interview of 2016. And both of us, both Wes and I, agreed that we could not think of anyone better than our colleague and friend, Didi Vergados. And Didi is a certified master hypnotist with a private clinic here in Toronto, and she holds a deep fascination with the power of the mind and believes that we have an untapped potential within our minds that we are just beginning to scratch the surface of. Now, because of her curiosity, Dee Dee has also founded InTheKnowRadio.com, where she has interviewed a number of ordinary people that were able to achieve extraordinary things in their lives. In her current series, which is called Miracles in Hypnosis, Dee Dee has interviewed 50 of the world's top hypnotists who have shared with her the miracles that they have seen in their hypnotherapy practices. And some of these miracles, which are just in endless variety, but some of these miracles include getting rid of tumors in a matter of minutes to days, healing incurable diseases, the power of emergency hypnosis, which is something I'm anxious to talk about, and of course, the personal transformations that have changed lives. So we are very, very thrilled to welcome to our show, to contact this evening, Dee Dee Vergados, who is the director of the Bloom Center for Hypnotherapy and is also a very skilled interviewer and on-air personality. Good evening, Dee Dee. How are you?
Hi, Leslie. Hi, Wes. It's an absolute pleasure to be with you.
Well, we are so pleased that you could join us for the first live interview of 2016 on Contact, which is, now in its fifth year, believe it or not. We're still chugging along, and one of these days, you guys will see what we look like. One of these days, I promise, we'll have a visual component sooner than you may think.
I'm hitting the makeup chair, I'm telling you.
I have to have a little plastic surgery, of course, before we get to that point. But before we really get into it with Dee Dee, we did just want to mention the passing of a dear friend of Contact Radio, a gal that has appeared on our show several times, skilled author, archaeologist, ethnomythologist, and she went by the pen name of Archaya S., and her real name was D.M. Murdoch, and Dorothy Murdoch, and she made her transition on Christmas Day after a valiant battle with cancer. So our love and our thoughts and our hearts go out to D.M. Murdoch and her family and friends. And I would also like to urge everyone out there that you may still purchase her wonderful books, particularly Who Was Moses? That's one of my favorites. You can purchase her books, her ethno-astrology calendars, which are fascinating. And Wes, do you have the website link handy for that?
All sorts of them, actually. And we just want to say that somebody that worked beside her all along, N.W. Barker, is carrying on the work. And D.M. Murdoch wow, she was so prolific. The Christ Conspiracy, Sons of God, Who Was Jesus, Christ in Egypt, you name it. And there's a lot of websites connected with her work. So I'll just shout out some of them, and you can go to any of these and help out the cause. So truthbeknown.com, stellarhousepublishing.com, tbknews.blogspot.com, freethroughnation.com. So those are a host of sites you can visit to collect your fascinating work and carry on that work.
Wow. And she was just so, I just want to say how brave she was, not only in her handling of her illness, and not only was she brave in that regard, but within her career, she had the insight and the courage to say that not everything that one reads in various scriptural books, you know, the Holy Bible, etc., should be taken literally or is literal. And she certainly put forth the idea that some things in the Bible are transmuted history, there may be metaphor, there may be confusions, and she, through her historical research, was able to really open up our minds. We are not sheep. We don't have to accept things that seem absurd. Anyway, without going any further into that, we thank her for her tremendous bravery and courage in standing up to the status quo and in standing up in favor of analysis and opening your minds and education and languages and travel. God bless her and her family. She will be much missed.
A wonderful, brilliant woman. And we have two other wonderful, brilliant women on the show tonight. That would not include me.
Not unless something very unusual happened on your recent holiday.
I noticed you were growing your hair, Wes.
Yes, this is true.
Dee Dee, thank you for joining us, and I'm so excited to have you on the show, and of course to talk to a colleague about this incredibly inspiring work that we do. As I'm often saying, I'm in awe of the work. I'm still in awe of the work of the process of hypnotherapy. How did you become, or how did you come to the discipline of hypnosis in your life?
Well, that's an interesting question. A long time ago, and I'm guessing I were maybe 5, 6, or 7, I remember my mother reading us a bedtime story. But she was actually reading us the story of somebody who had learned to harness the power of her mind. Now, I can't remember that much about it because it was a number of years ago, but he talks about practicing meditation and staring into a candle, and then he slowly developed his psychic powers, and then he took it to the casinos, and he learned to like vibe out cards ahead of time. And I was just so fascinated by this that I thought, golly, like, there must be something to this. We have more power than we're aware of. And then, of course, as I got older, I think I was 16, I read, you know, the story about Edgar Cayce. And Edgar Cayce, as you know, was a trance channel.
Yes.
They would put him into a form of hypnosis, and he would channel medical readings. And, I mean, he did, I think it was 14,000 or something. And there it was again. It was like, oh, my gosh. There are things we don't know, we don't understand, but they're possible. And I don't really care how. All I care is that it is possible because... he said such prolific things, and his medical readings were so true that when people actually heeded his advice and they did it, they were actually okay. And some of those things have been discovered today to be true healing, like healing remedies or things like that. Now that they've done the research. So again, I was fascinated, and I would always go back to, I wonder how it works. So again, I remember I was about 18 years old, and I thought, well, when people get diseased, we all start out with a perfect body, more or less, most of us. And something happens along the way, and the body learns to have a disease, and I kept thinking, but what if we just remembered what it was like when we had perfect health? And again, this curiosity just fueled me to the point where I just had to become a hypnotist because it was the only way in which I knew that we could tap into this power of the mind. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what I believe occurs when we go into hypnosis is, for those people that don't know exactly what happens in hypnosis, what we're doing is we're kind of getting that conscious mind. That's the gatekeeper, the one that filters all the information that comes in. We're kind of having it sit in the background, and we're accessing the unconscious mind. And at the level of the unconscious mind, our belief system is suspended, so really anything's possible, you know, if we have the courage to present it to the client. And what I've learned through interviewing those 50 hypnotists is that, you know, those who were bold and made suggestions for healing, whether they believed it was possible or not, under hypnosis, somehow people were able to do things like get rid of tumors in a weekend. There's a hypnotist, he's a fantastic older gentleman, he's 92 years old, his name is A.L. Ward.
Oh, yeah.
He talks about, you know, this tumor that was on the spine of, I think it was a 14-year-old, and he said, you know, why is it there? And he said, well, it turns out he was bullied, and he had a bully on his back, so kind of an interesting connection. But Al goes straight in. He just says, can it be healed? And the unconscious side, they're going to say yes or no. And if it says yes, he goes, okay, heal it. And at that time when he said this to this kid, this tumor just burst into a thousand tiny little, as he said, stars, I think was what the child said. And, of course, when they did the biopsy a week later, there was no tumor anymore. So it is absolutely fascinating. We don't know the limits to this at this point, but in through interviewing people, it's definitely even broadened what I thought was possible. And I was a big believer in the possibilities. So there you have it. That's how I got into hypnosis. Now, I had been practicing for 6 years, and sometimes when I would talk to more of my seasoned colleagues, a good friend of mine, Mike Mandel, he would just, you know, in passing, he would just say, oh, yeah, by the way, I work with this lady. She had asthma, 35 years. She was on 2 inhalers. Yeah, one session, she's good to go. She's not using the inhalers anymore. And I would be like, okay, Mike, I really need to know what, like, if I could be a fly on the wall, it would just be the most precious thing ever. So this piqued my curiosity. So I thought, okay, rather than taking him to lunch and him explaining how he did it, I mean, he's not the only one that has these miracles. He has many of them. He's a forensic hypnotist. So, I mean, the things he's been able to have, the crimes that have been solved as a result of hypnosis are just unbelievable.
Yes.
So I thought, okay, there's got to be something I can learn here. I want to interview hypnotists. And since I'd done it, it was just, the stories were just so mind-blowing. Things like fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, these so-called autoimmune, incurable diseases. I mean, people were able to hold at bay. So whether you want to call it a cure or whether, you know, they just never manifested the symptoms, I don't know. But these things like diseases, incurable diseases were being, I don't want to say the word cured, I just want to say they just went away. Martin Peterson, another, and he's a bold one, talk about a trooper, he challenged himself to have a heart surgery without anesthetic. So I know, you know what, look, I was thinking, what if Leslie asked me if I would do it? I'm not sure I'd be quite that bold, because here's what happened to Martin. And this guy is a trooper. He's an amazing, like, he's just a total adventurer. So he decided, okay, I want to have this heart surgery. He had a defect in his heart, something that they had to put a little device up through his groin in, and they had to burn a certain piece off his heart. I don't know, something, some kind of heart defect that his heartbeat would start to go crazy, and he actually had a mini heart attack. So, and he was only 40. So anyway, so he decides, okay, I'm going to do this without any anesthetic.
Oh,
I know, talk about, I am not sure I have the guts to do that, but so here's what happened to Martin. They gave him some medication that made his heartbeat go crazy, so it frightened him a little bit, so unfortunately, he wasn't able to stay in the type of trance that allowed him to feel no pain, so through the first heart surgery, he actually felt it, but he didn't want to say anything, right?
Yeah, I know.
So then he decides, okay, I'm going to go through the second one. This time I know how to prepare. You know, I'm going to make sure that I stay in trance. And he says to the doctor, when you're all done, you're going to tap on my shoulder twice and you're going to say, we're done. So he goes through this six-hour surgery, doesn't feel a thing this time because now he's really put his mind into that zone. There's no shocks, there's no nothing. Doctor taps twice on his shoulder, says, we're done. And Martin's like, oh, yeah, that's great. He comes out of the hypnosis, and then the doctor says, oh, let me take the catheter out now. He'd forgotten.
Oh, no.
Catheter out, and Martin's going, ah, like he's feeling everything.
Oh.
So what a contrast. No, but I mean, it's still, that just shows you. He went through a six-hour heart surgery, didn't feel a thing. When the surgeon, you know, emerged him out of the hypnosis, there you go. He felt every little inch of that catheter coming out. So in terms of the power of the mind, it can stop bleeding. When we are given suggestions for surgery, we heal much faster. I mean, the power of the mind, when utilized in a way through hypnotic suggestion, I don't even know what the limits are anymore. It's just so profound.
You're absolutely right. And certainly, whenever a client of mine is going to have surgery, I have a pre-surgical protocol that I've sort of developed, which involves suggestions about not bleeding excessively and all of the things that the doctor would want to see in a surgery to make it successful.
Right.
I know that these suggestions work because people will tell me things like, well, my doctor said I absolutely refused to bleed. It was almost uncanny. You know, so I know that these things do work. Now, if I had been your colleague there with the your brave colleague with the heart surgery, I think I probably would have had a colleague with me in the operating room to reintroduce me into trance if it was necessary. You know, I don't know if I would have trusted myself to remain in a state of psycho-cybernetic hypnosis. I don't know if I would have
yeah.
done that. That's very, very brave. But certainly, I have gone into the operating room for things like, it was a pretty gruesome thing I did not too long ago, a spinal tap. You know, there are procedures, but I will usually, you know, suit up as necessary and go right into the surgical bay.
Oh, and is this for your client or for yourself?
No, for my clients. I do that because I am certified in pain management modalities. So it's one of my kind of little specialties that I do. But I would often, not often, but I have on occasion been asked by the client to be present at the time of the surgery. So that I can, now I've never done anything like a heart surgery, mind you. I'm talking more about procedures, like as I mentioned, a spinal tap or a, you know, something that's a painful procedure. I've been in hospital for that and been able to, of course, completely anesthetize, we call it hypnoanalgesia actually, to completely anesthetize the area where the action is happening. So the power of the mind, as you said, unbelievable. I agree with you. I think it's limitless. I believe that people can heal themselves. I've seen it, especially with what we categorize as autoimmune disorders, which is interesting that you should mention that. And, of course, you know, Georgina Cannon, my great mentor and friend, she has sort of collated a number of psychological issues that seem to instigate certain health conditions, asthma being one of them. Invariably, someone who has asthma, well, not invariably, but often someone who suffers from asthma is a child that was not allowed to speak and express themselves, someone that had to swallow their words, literally.
Mm-hmm.
So we do, in the intake, you know, you can kind of see these correlations sometimes, and therefore you can maybe get to the core issue. Would you say, Dee Dee, that's the intuitive or the psychic part about the work that we do, is finding that node, finding the core issue?
Well, the interesting thing is when you ask the unconscious at that mind-body level, it will actually tell you. Just to give you an example, I've had a couple people, the ones that stand out in my mind for some reason at this moment are the skin conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a young man who had had both eczema and rosacea, and he had had it from the time he was about 12, well into his mid-20s. And, you know, I started probing around, and then I eventually asked his unconscious, you know, what's going on? What's causing this? And then he brought up an emotion, and I said, what's that emotion linked to? I can't remember exactly how I got to it, but it's like he's beating himself up all the time.
I was going to say, some kind of self-loathing is usually involved with rosacea. Yes. Oh, boy.
And as you know, with every behavior, there's a positive intention behind that behavior. So he was trying to motivate himself by telling himself, look, you're pathetic. You're no good. That's why you don't study and you don't do anything. It's kind of like a parent would try and motivate their kid by saying you're stupid. And what they're really trying to do is motivate the kid to study more, right? So and we do that to ourselves. So once he got the message, he's like, oh, I get it. And then I even have his body explain what that does on the inside when he's beating himself up. So he's having a dialogue between himself, between his mind and body connection, and he simply agreed to stop that. And we came up with several other ways in which he could speak to himself that were more healthy and motivating. And of course, boom, it's all gone. Yeah. So it's fascinating when we can have people go inside, figure it out what it is at the mind-body level, because there's always some kind of emotional component that's connected. There's something that we need to start doing or stop doing emotionally that's going to impact the physical manifestation of the disease. So I don't know what Mike Mandel did that one day with the lady with the asthma, but I know he did something, because I've even seen it in my own practice. Steve Rame, another hypnotist I interviewed, he worked with a woman who had been recently diagnosed with breast cancer. And I think he did like a 3-hour-long session with him. And he just said, I brought her in and out of hypnosis. And he didn't exactly explain what he did. But when she went back on Monday to get a biopsy, the doctor was so astounded because the tumor was gone. So, and not only was it gone, there was some kind of scar tissue that was left behind that showed that it had been there. So this doctor was so amazed, he actually went and drove up the medical results to the university himself, because he knew darn well that, you know, a week before, that tumor was there, right? And now it's gone. And the only explanation was the hypnotic session she had done that Saturday. So again, I don't even care anymore how it happens. The fact that it does happen and is possible is what all I'm concerned about, because someday we will be able to figure out what occurs that causes that healing to happen so rapidly. But until then, it's good enough for me just to know that it can happen.
Absolutely. I couldn't have put it better or agree more. And do you think, Dee Dee, that, you know, just going back to your own life path and your obvious attraction and facilitation of this modality, do you think it might be possible that in another past life or past life experiences that you used this modality?
You know, I've often contemplated that, because when I came into this life, I had a strong urge. I really had this fascination with medicine, but my fascination for the mind was stronger. And I thought to myself, it all starts in the mind. If we can work it out there, then it will heal physically. So obviously I took that path. Now, again, past lives, who knows if this is even true, because I've interviewed a number of hypnotists on the past life phenomena. And again, the results are just profound about what people are able to heal with just by simply revisiting a trauma in a past life. But I always did have a feeling that at one point I was a doctor, and a friend of mine says, yes, I remember our past lives together. We were both doctors. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a fascination again. And it's something I came into this world with. I just always knew it. I just always knew that this is my path. Now, it took me a while to get on that path, because I kind of messed around here and there. I wasn't as confident. You know, I didn't believe that, you know, I could be a person that worked with people in my very much younger years. But of course, you get out into the world and you learn, hey, I'm fine just the way I am. So So it did take me a while to get on that path. But, yeah, I did have a very, very strong urge. And again, I think it was the influence of things like Edgar Casey as well, so that got me on this path.
Indeed. Well, that is, we certainly have, pardon me, an awful lot in common in our paths to this work. Now, Wes, we've got to get you to jump in here, buddy. I know you're there. Please, I'm sure you must have something that you'd like to ask Dee Dee.
Well, I'm listening in, fascinated from two standpoints. Fascinated from the standpoint of being a client and having gone through a lot of hypnosis, and fascinating in the power that we have over our bodies. And I'm going to have to go back to a Star Trek episode. Sorry. For
Me too, as quickly as possible.
There was a Star Trek episode, the original crew, where the crew was, let's say, hypnotized by Spock. It wasn't exactly that. To ignore bullets passing through them. And the important thing was that they could have zero doubt about it. Any doubt could cause the bullet to actually hurt them. And so Spock did this Vulcan mind meld on them. And in the end, not one of the characters had any doubt that they would survive. And so they had rounds and rounds of bullets fired through them, and they survived. And so I was thinking about your friend that went through open heart surgery. And is that, as far as you know, in your professional opinion, Dee Dee, is that a case of having no doubt?
I think the second time, when he knew how to handle any environmental things that may arise, he had no doubt. He was actually sidetracked the first time. He did not expect, he didn't know he would be given medication that made his heart speed up like crazy, which scared him, which kept him out of a trance. But again, at that level, when our belief systems are suspended, if we can be congruent in what we believe about the trance, people do things like walk on hot coals, or in other cultures, they're sticking, entire needles through their arms. They feel no pain. When people go to see John of God, I mean, he's literally lining up 12 people. He's taking some rusty old butter knife and doing cataract surgery on each one of them, going just straight down the line, scraping off the cataract, and they feel nothing. I actually saw a video taken personally by a guy that went to see John of God. Mm-hmm. And this person, their entire leg was gangrene from diabetes. And John of God, he just took this like a sloughing pad, just like a Brillo pad you'd scrape your pots with, and just starts ferociously scraping this gangrene off. Now, I can't imagine what it would feel like on your regular skin to have someone take like a pot scrubber and like rather viciously. And again, the guy didn't even flinch. So how is this happening? People have commented that when the closer they get to the area where John of God is doing it, the more they go into trance. There's like some kind of energy that takes over. But again, like other cultures, I mean, they're doing amazing things like digging big hooks in their back and carrying, a caravan of people on a sled behind them. I mean, they're just able to achieve such amazing things we have yet to know what our capabilities are in terms of using this power of the mind.
The person with the gangrene healed themselves, did they not?
Well, I don't know. I just saw the video that this mm-hmm. guy had shot personally, and I guess what he did was John of God took those old pot scrubbers and just scrubbed all that gangrene away, and then I guess that left the leg open to healing. I'm not quite sure what happened after that, but the fact, I mean, don't you think that would be slightly painful?
Hugely painful.
I can't imagine. They certainly they are in a state of trance, some type of state of trance, to be sure. And and I think what John of God does is of course a little bit different than, I think maybe he has some magic. He's a little bit different. But I often think of these evangelical hustlers, these right wing. Sideshow Barker type guys, right? They get everybody all whipped up into a state of hysteria, which is a little different than, I suppose it could be considered a form of hypnosis or trance, but when people reach a state of hysteria or the mob mentality, then suddenly the adrenaline is going. and people are walking, you know, that can't walk. And that simply is a massive chemical release of endorphins and adrenaline that is somehow triggered by the mob mentality. I often have wondered if that's something that happens in battle. I mean, thank God, at least in this life, I don't know the answer to that. But I know that my late dad told me, you know, before the Korean War, and he was a jazz musician and a comedy writer, the most gentle soul you could imagine. And he said, but by the time they were finished with him in basic training, he was ready to go kill people.
Yeah.
And this was indeed an indoctrination using, I think, a type of hypnosis, probably sleep deprivation, all of those things that we see on the dark side.
It actually is. The U.S. military is cited as one of the number one brainwashing organizations because they do use those things. It's constant suggestion. First, what they do is they break you down. You can't have a you, right? You just have to. You know, they have to break down the you inside of you, the you that questions things, that has morals, that has values. And they're doing this through, you know, berating you, exercise, fatigue, whatever it is they use. And then they're building you up into this machine that it doesn't really think for itself and just acts based on suggestion. And don't think that those evangelists don't know what they're doing, because they actually have stereo systems rigged up. And they play music that mimics, you know, the beats per second of the heart. They know exactly what they're doing, and they are putting in people into a group trance.
Yes,
and they're
yes.
building up that hysteria, and they're creating, well, you know, what's called a PGO spike. It's like a little shock in the brain, and whenever we shock someone, we do a shock, what's called a shock induction, shock hypnotic induction, where we shock them. Whatever we yell in is carried out, right? So that's they're doing it. So they are actually doing a form of hypnosis. I've never followed anything up to see, you know, those people that got up and stood up out of their wheelchair. Did they?
It's temporary. It's invariably temporary, but they are using every technique. In fact, they hire people, you know, they hire NLP people, and I'm an NLP practitioner, but I don't use my powers for the dark side, but I see how that could easily happen. I mean, ad agencies hire NLP practitioners, people like us, to figure out how to manipulate the public when they're in a light state of trance watching television.
Well, one of our most prolific thinkers, if you start to look at people like Michio Kaku, who is one of the most well-known mainstream physicists, I mean, he's writing a book on the power of the mind. Leonard Mlodinow, who co-wrote with Stephen Hawking, actually wrote a book called Subliminal, How Your Unconscious Mind Rules Your Behavior. And he talks about just how susceptible we are. I mean, if you actually, you know, sometimes how a company might, well, this is probably going back a long time ago, but do you remember how they used to have those community coffee machines where you're supposed to kind of like deposit a quarter every time you have a, well, he would talk about experiments where they just placed a picture of an eye somewhere in the room and it doubled people's, you know, donation.
Right.
Because it's like when you walk through the supermarket, not the supermarket, the, through Eaton's or the Bay or one of those big, malls, and you feel there's a mannequin, but you feel like someone's staring at you. Somehow we pick up through our peripheral that somebody's staring at me, you know? Mm-hmm. So Leonard Mlodinow ended up writing this book, and it's just a compilation of the crazy ways in which we're influenced subliminally. And it's mind-blowing. I'll just give you another quick example, because I always find this study so amazing. So he talks about a study about a wine store, and one day they played, you know, French music. They had French wine on one side and German wine on the other side. So one day they play the French music, and they sold 75% French wine that day. The next day they played the German music, and that day they sold 70% German music. And they asked the people, you know, were you aware that music was playing in the background? Some of them were, some of them weren't. But it literally influenced their decision on what to buy. To that extent,
no,
so we're always being influenced subliminally.
Constantly and perpetually by use of color, by use of smell. We're all in a light state of trance. Now, Dee Dee, you're much too young to remember this, but they used to have you could even be hypnotized through the mail. And there used to be a thing where they would have these book clubs or record clubs where you had to put these little stickers. You know, you had to go through the whole brochure and figure out what CDs or books you wanted. You'd put these little stickers in places. That was actually, they really had the customer hypnotized by something that came in the mail through the act of this sticker placement. Very clever.
Yeah, it was compliance. They're getting customer compliance by telling them, making them take an action and do something.
Yeah.
Right? Suggesting, yeah. We are so influenced. If people understood the degree to which we were influenced, they would be shocked and they'd be watching exactly what they feed their minds with. For TV, for example, you know, those commercials, when they have the huge picture of the steaming hot plate at around between 6 and 7 and mm-hmm. the food is so colorful and the heat rising off it. I mean, one time I was sitting, I always, because I know what occurs, first of all, the TV is an automatic trance. They have done experiments and nobody is able to stay out of a trance for over a minute.
No, it incites the alpha waves by the very nature of it. Yes.
Does it? Flicker rate of the TV. So knowing this, I'm very, you know, when I used to watch TV and have cable, I don't even do that anymore. I used to always change the channel when the commercials came on. But one day I'm sitting on the couch, just had dinner with a friend of mine, and the commercials are playing in the background, and I'm chatting away, and I'm like, oh God, I feel hungry. I feel like I want to eat something. And I'm going, what on earth is going on with me? I just finished dinner and I looked and wasn't there a commercial playing in the background? One of those food commercials with the steaming hot plate. So again, it can influence you to do things that you're not even interested in, like eating after you had just finished dinner. So again, be very, very, very careful what you allow go into your mind, because at some level it could be influencing you.
Indeed, and we have and some people are far more receptive than others, and children the most receptive of all, which is why I am against advertising towards advertising toys, advertising anything to children, because they are vulnerable and have absolutely no discrimination. They're like little sponges. You know, I don't know if you do much pediatric hypnosis, but we don't even, when you're working with children, you don't even really put them in trance.
No,
it's you know, there's no need for it because they're already there.
Yeah, and they're already fine. Yeah, they just do it. You know, and they're the easiest clients in the world to work with, because literally in one session they're like done.
Yeah, they're fixed. They have no. They absorb it. They get it. They do it. I love working with teenagers and kids. It's very refreshing compared to some of the old hard-boiled, narrow-minded, defensive, repressive people that can come your way. And rather than talk about repression, maybe we should talk a bit about regression, because I know you were interested, Dee Dee, in you know, some of the work that Wes and I have done together and that I have done with other, you know, experiencers. And Wes, would you like to talk a little bit about your process, just to sort of lead us down that country lane?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And in fact, I think our listeners would really like to hear both of your takes on a question I have. And I've lived through the question, so, you know, I can safely speak about it. I came to Leslie, I guess, about 6 years ago, after finally reaching a point where I was beginning to feel not stable. I was beginning to feel that I didn't have conscious volition with respect to alien entities interfering with my life. And I was getting really frustrated. And sleep was kind of out of the question. It's not great now, but it was awful then. I was afraid to go to sleep, actually. And so I came to Leslie, and Leslie didn't know me from Adam. And so this question is kind of directed to both of you. How do you know, I know you do an assessment, but how do you really know I'm not coming to you as a kook? You know, you're accepting the fact that I've had some trauma, but my trauma is like out there, man. It's in outer space. So how do you know that that's legit?
Well, I'll start. First of all, does it even matter? Because it's what you believe. And if we work at it at the level of what you believe, as long as you get better, I mean, does that make sense, Leslie? Like, if you believe that's occurring and we can help you through that, then you're going to get better. I mean, who are we to convince you otherwise?
Very true, Dee Dee. And as I often say, you know, to experiencers who, you know, come to me for hypnosis, I don't really care if these events have happened physically in the third density or if they are etheric events. It doesn't matter one bit to me because they are real to you. Now, that being said, certainly, and Dee Dee, I know you would concur with this, a certain percentage of people who come to me believing that they are contactees and have had experiences, a certain percentage of those people are not mentally healthy and have some type of dissociative disorder.
And that's part of my question, by the way. Yeah, that's part of it.
So I guess now myself, I'm also in the States. I'm a psychiatric technician, which is kind of like a psychiatric nurse. I haven't worked at it for many years, but I worked extensively with very, very mentally ill people for a long time. So for me, I rely not only on my intellectual knowledge of symptomology, but when I'm taking the psychiatric history, I can usually tell by, NLP techniques or just instinct if someone is not being truthful about their mental health history. So I would have to say that a big part in assessing someone's core issues is instinctual.
I agree.
I would say that.
Yeah, because I can sense the schizophrenics from a mile away. Yeah. And I can't work with them because what we do isn't, well, I mean, I've never tried. Maybe you've
no,
decided.
We are completely,
it's not going to
really precluded from treating dissociative disorders and diagnosed mental illness. We really can't under our practitioner's licenses in the state of Ontario. So we do have to be kind of, and even if someone is on, if they're on heavy psychotropic medications, something like, Thorazine or Stelazine or Haldol or Melaril, something like that, I don't work with them unless I have a note from their psychiatrist. If it's for a specific thing, like if it's for sleep issues or smoking, if it's for something that isn't really heavily related to the pathology of the mental health issue, if I have a note from the psychiatrist, that satisfies my insurance and I can proceed. But it's not something that I really like to do, Dee Dee. I have done it upon occasion with permission, but it's always trepidatious and it's not something that I really like to do.
Well, in truth, if we don't feel like we can help somebody, we have no right to be working with them. But this brings up another fascinating topic, which again is inexplicable, and that's past life regression. Because things occur under past life regression, such as xenoglossy, which is speaking a foreign mm-hmm. language. That person has no knowledge of that foreign language, yet when put in a trance and finding themselves in a past life, can speak that language. So I've often wondered, are they real? My question is, are they real? I know that when people go back into them and they go through whatever it is that is somehow connected with a current day illness, it goes away, and that's all great. And I'm the jury's still out. Is it their imagination? And we have these amazing imaginations that can come up with stories and then heal them? Or do we really have past lives? And I've asked a number of hypnotists, and Leslie, you can chime in too and tell me what you think, because while a person, if you've ever done past life regression, while they're going through it, it is absolutely, I mean, I should be paying them, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting experience. Like, I feel so privileged. But when you watch them go through it, they are describing it as it's happening. You know there's no time to be making up this story.
Yeah.
But they come out healed. So is it really, are there really past lives or what is it?
After doing an awful lot of past life regression, my belief system says that yes, these people are having a bona fide experience, where once you get that veil, that webbing out of the way between the conscious and the subconscious mind, that you can travel into the soul, you can access the soul memory, And now there's a lot of fascinating research where we understand now that there's a whole school of contemporary thought that memory lives outside the body, that it isn't even really part of the mechanical, you know, hard drive that the brain is, that the organic brain is. There's also been some very interesting studies done recently in the real-time mapping of the brain, where they have involved some hypnotherapists, or probably psychiatrists that do hypnosis, more likely. But they've taken subjects into the lab and wired them up and inducted them into trance and got them into a past life recollection. Now, what you would expect to see would be the imagination centers firing, you know, the frontal lobe. You would expect all the things that go on when creativity is occurring to be firing. But much to the surprise of the neurologists, that isn't what they were seeing firing. What they were seeing firing was areas of the amygdala, the deep memory centers, essentially. So there is, in fact, proof in at least these isolated cases that have been researched that what was going on in that person's brain during that past life regression was coming from the memory and not from the creative centers. So
that
to me is very promising, and I think we're going to see more research like that. And indeed, in my experience, I would say probably 90% of the past life regressions that I've done I believe to be genuine. I think I probably have regressed some people who were manipulative and actually maybe not in a deep enough trance and were maybe fabricating. I have doubts about 10%, of about 10%.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. There's a couple that I just thought, yeah, you'd probably like to believe you were that special person back then.
That's you don't see people coming out as Cleopatra, you know. And I had one gal who, although parts of the regression were very authentic, she suddenly started to believe that she was, or talk about herself as if she was William Wordsworth, the great poet laureate and essayist of, you know, just after the Shakespearean era. So that would have been the only famous person that I would have ever uncovered in all of my work. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but it seemed just a little too pat, a little too creative, a little too, you know, I didn't feel that it was a genuine.
More like she would like to believe that she was.
I think. And she may have been recounting, and I think that she had so much detail about the environment and the city, and there was an awful lot of detail. So I think maybe there would have been maybe it was some kind of a bleed through. Maybe some of it was accurate information from some life as a maid, kitchen maid, and, you know, who knows. But, you know, it's not hard science, but it is becoming a provable scientific fact.
Well, here's the interesting, and I want to pose this idea to you and see what you think, because A.L. Ward talks about hypnotizing people to where they are open to other dimensional beings. So this is much like abductees.
Yes,
where
yes.
Their brain is somewhere open to other dimensions and receiving communications, whether they're actually taken out of their bed at night or whether it's all experienced in the mind, we don't know. Now, the interesting thing is with the study of psychedelics, when they put people in MRIs and research their brain, they have access to these other dimensions. If you know of anybody who's ever had a psilocybin or a DMT journey, they're like literally like, I was outside the earth, I met these beings, much like Dr. Rick Straussman, who did the experiments on DMT. A lot of people said there was aliens, there was other dimensional beings. Now, when they put people into scanners and scanned their brain, I think it was MRIs, what that they showed was actually a shutting down of part of the brain, and that part of the brain was the identity center. So it's shutting down the you, which means it's opening you up to another realm of consciousness and all oneness or those other dimensions. So I don't know. Like, I just don't know what to think of this. Is it the DMT that we're releasing because it's naturally endogenous to us that's causing, you know, the other dimensional experiences? Is it actually occurring? Like, again, it's just such a fascinating subject.
Fascinating, Dee Dee. And you know, there are a few ways to look at this. Now, the first thing I will say is that at the point where Wes and I are in our work together with his experiences, I would say it's about as close now to real-time channeling as it's ever been. In other words, I put him in trance, and he is able to converse with a particular being that he has had many experiences with.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and that's what we're doing now. And that seems to be, and also I have another gentleman that I'm working with who I work with many times who is now also at that stage where I can put him in trance and he will be able to communicate in that altered state with a being that he has many experiences with. So this is some of the most fascinating stuff, I think, that we've worked on is the real-time communication, which I believe is completely bona fide. Now, we also know that when people take interlife journeys through regression, I'm not talking about a past life regression, but the Michael Newton interlife journeys, that it's very common for people to see beings in other types of forms that are not necessarily humanoid in what we would call, you know, the afterlife or heaven or whatever term you want to use. So now, I'm not going to discount anyone who believes that their DMT experiences or their psilocybin experiences have brought them into that state where they are able to communicate in that way but I would like to think that we don't necessarily need to ingest something to get to that place, that it's a natural part of us, that we can release whatever chemicals we need to release to accomplish that communication or that astral travel or whatever you wish to. And I guess maybe I'm a little bit prejudiced because, to be honest with both of you, you know, I'm from the 70s, and when I was at university, LSD, psilocybin were the drugs of choice, and I took an awful lot of LSD during university. Sorry, folks, that's just the way it was, and I didn't have those kinds of spiritual experiences in that way that people are talking about. But I think you can sort of program your trip. In other words, maybe if I had been seeking that, if I'd been aware, if I'd been seeking that, if I'd been to anything other than, you know, partying with my friends on a frozen lake, you know, or so, you know, if I'd been consciously directing that trip, maybe there would have been some kind of experience. I know people that I greatly respect, Graham Hancock, the incredible author, archaeologist. He has written a whole book about his DMT experiences where he believes that he has met and interacted with extraterrestrial beings. So maybe so, but I don't think that's the right path for me. I would rather get there through meditation and other more spiritual mind-body disciplines. I don't think I would want to be that high again like that, frankly. I really don't. Not for 12 hours, man.
Yeah, and I couldn't imagine. I don't know. People who take LSD are troopers. But the thing is with whatever you want to do, whether you're going into hypnosis, to go in with a reverence for intention. You know, what do you want to pull out of this? What, you know, what's your intention going in? So I think when used in that way, psychedelics are great. But again, it all boils down to whether you use hypnosis, whether you use psychedelic, you're either opening up some part of the brain or shutting down some part of the brain that gives you this ability to communicate with these other dimensions or these other world beings. I mean, I've heard many other hypnotists talk about it. I've never really had anyone channel anyone in my office anyways, other than just spirit guides, right? Mm-hmm. Their own personal spirit guides, which give them some really profound advice. And of course, you know, in the interlife, they've talked to council members, the ones that are advising them on the life they've just gone through or the life they're about to go through. So in terms of that, yeah. But I still find it just so interesting. And again, someday we're going to know how it occurs biochemically. We're going to know, like they're starting to see with the psilocybin, that it shuts down the identity centers. Okay, so when that you is out of the way, it opens you up to everything else, right?
Well, I agree. I think, personally, I think the whole key is in, you know, what, you know, Jesus talked about is the upper room. I think the whole key is in that little tiny gland that is about the size of a grain of rice that is photosensitive in our bodies. And I think it is, as you say, there are releases, complex releases of enzymes, chemicals, hormones, blah, 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 that can facilitate our spiritual journeys and bilocation and all kinds of other stuff. And also, I would just like to say that I think that it's probably totally feasible that someone's spirit guide could be a being that has incarnated on another planet. And, you know, I don't see why one should necessarily eclipse the other. And I think that some of the beings that we interact with are not really physical. It's very hard for them to manifest.
They're dimensional. Yeah, they're dimensional beings.
They're dimensional beings, exactly. So, oh my goodness, Dee Dee, this is so fascinating. I cannot even believe it. Our time is almost up. How did that happen? This is going to have to be part one.
Definitely.
It's just so interesting because I'd love to hear about some of your experiences working with the abductees and getting in contact and what maybe they have messages for us that are going to help us somehow because we really do need help.
They do. I think there are very special people who are on the planet, very special children who are part there and part here. And they've come in with tremendous technical facility, a tremendous disdain for governmental bullshit.
Good.
And tremendous individuality. So I think the actual character of the planet is changing by these, you know, remarkable young people. Yes, we have lots of problems. Yes, we have poverty and violence, but there is also a hugely positive movement of love and awareness and high vibration, and more than 50% of the planet is vibrating at a very high rate. I can feel it, and I think it's important that we stay positive. And you and I, Dee Dee, we're changing the world one person at a time.
Well, I'm enjoying it. I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, I should be paying people for getting to probe around and it's so interesting, and it can feel so nice at the end of the day when someone walks out and they just simply, you know, they could have been plagued by years with pain or whatever it is, and they're like, oh, I feel better.
Yeah.
So, you know,
so satisfying. And for the abductees, when that person finally understands that they're not mentally ill, that they're not alone, that they're okay, that is a huge, that's a gift. I'm kind of getting a little choked up here to talk about it in that way, but that's a gift that we are allowed to use this modality to help people in the many ways that hypnosis can help people. So now, Dee Dee, what's the best way for people to reach you? Should they want to call you for your wonderful services or chat with you or what have you?
Well, I'm reachable by phone at 416-709-8895, or you can simply go to bloomhypnosis.com. Bloom as in bloom into your full potential, because that's what I like to see is people begin to bloom. So bloomhypnosis.com.
All right. Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Dee Dee. And again, folks, our wonderful, lovely, erudite guest this evening has been our friend Dee Dee Vergados. And Dee Dee, you've got to come back on in a month or so.
Oh, yes, please.
And talk some more because we just really scratched the surface. And we can't thank you enough. Wes, you have a few words there?
Just to say thanks again, Dee Dee, because I know when we first discussed this, you were wondering, gee, what could I contribute to this particular show? Well, you've just seen the slightest bit of that, so we're going to really welcome you back next time.
Thank you.
We will. Thank you, Dee Dee, and you take good care. And remember, we are not alone. Good night from Contact. Good night, Dee Dee. Good night, Wes.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.